Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Ronald Reagan surged to a big victory over George Bush, and President Carter once again defeated Senator Kennedy. Those are the major results of yesterday's primary elections in New Hampshire, reported from Manchester by Reed Collins.
With complete returns in, Ronald Reagan has 50% of the Republican vote and 13 delegates. George Bush got 23% of the vote for 5 delegates. Howard Baker got 13%, 2 delegates, and John Anderson was fourth with 10% of the popular vote and 2 delegates. Crane and Connolly trailed with 2% of the vote each, no delegates, and Dole is dead last. In the Democratic column, President Carter led with 49% and 10 delegates to Senator Kennedy's 38%. The way the delegates are divided, however, Kennedy gets the remaining 9. Governor Brown was third with 10% of the popular vote and no delegates. The turnout of well over 250,000 eclipsed all records for either party in New Hampshire. Reed Collins, CBS News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
President Carter was gratified by his victory in New Hampshire, and Jerry Bowen reports that the Republican winner, Ronald Reagan, was even more gratified.
It was a victory margin that stunned even the candidate. Ronald Reagan had thought all along the race would be close, perhaps a win by 5 points. The margin was actually more than 5 times that number and injected a new momentum in a campaign that is under new management. Ironically, on the day that Reagan scored an astounding victory, he dismissed his campaign architects, including the highly respected strategist John Sears. Reagan had been upset for months, say aides, about poor management, overspending, and infighting. He was also under pressure from his conservative supporters to fire Sears after the loss in the Iowa primary. Now at the helm, 66-year-old William J. Casey, an attorney who served in the Nixon and Ford administrations, a man who has never managed a national campaign. Next in store for Ronald Reagan, more of the same stump politicking that worked so well here at a previously unscheduled stop in Vermont, a primary just 1 week away. Jerry Bowen, CBS News, with the Reagan campaign in New Hampshire.
Senator Kennedy resumes campaigning today, first in Massachusetts, his home state, then in Alabama, and he says he'll stay in the race. But his campaign manager and brother-in-law, Stephen Smith, says a considerable number of changes may be made in the next several days in both personnel and strategy. Jerry Brown, the number three man in the Democratic race, has decided to skip all the primaries in March and move on to the April 1st primary in Wisconsin. CBS News correspondent Bernard Goldberg reports that by preparing for Wisconsin for a solid month, Brown thinks he just might win there and might pick up the spark he'll need to revive what may be a dying campaign. George Bush's campaign is by no means dying, but Richard Roth reports from Concord that it has obviously suffered a severe blow.
Their hope had been victory, but their expectation narrow defeat, and so it was more the size of the loss than the loss itself that stunned the Bush camp. Campaign director James Baker said the flap over last weekend's debate had turned off large numbers of voters. But Bush said he didn't know what happened. He had no ready explanation for the bad news.
I'm trying to find some good news out of getting beaten badly. And the good news is that I beat everybody else badly, by better than approximately 2-1.
In postmortems today, the candidate and his staff are trying to sort out what went wrong. One expected result, some additional appearances in Massachusetts, where the campaign resumes this evening. Richard Roth, CBS News, with the Bush campaign in Concord, New Hampshire.
The Massachusetts primary takes place next Tuesday. New Hampshire's presidential primary coincided with precinct caucuses in Minnesota, Vice President Mondale's home state. The returns there are incomplete, but Bob Fall reports the way the outcome looks at the moment.
Carter Mondale organizers predict that when the dust finally settles here, they'll have 55 of the state's 75 Democratic National Convention delegates. That, they say, is an impressive showing by the vice president in his own backyard, even though it now seems that at least 30% of the Democrats declared themselves uncommitted. Early Republican returns give the lead to Ronald Reagan, helped by an organization he set up here 4 years ago. George Bush is running second. His Minnesota campaign chairman calls it an unrelieved disaster. The biggest Republican loser seems to be John Connolly, now running fifth, despite spending more time and money here than anyone else. The biggest surprise, John Anderson, now running third, even though he hasn't campaigned in Minnesota since October. For Republicans, it was also somewhat embarrassing. A computer counting the party's straw poll broke down, so in a state which prides itself on political sophistication, The final tally has to be done by hand, and the results may not be known for days. Bob Fall, CBS News, Minneapolis.
Many thousands of blacks crowded the polling places today in Rhodesia at the start of a three-day election of a black majority to lead what will become the new nation of Zimbabwe. Robin Wright reports from Salisbury.
About 3 million blacks are eligible to vote in the contest to select a prime minister and 80 members of parliament. Whites, who voted in a separate election 2 weeks ago, will have 20 seats in parliament. Nine black political parties are vying to lead the new government. The three main contenders are considered to be former guerrilla leaders Robert Mugabe and Joshua Nkomo, and former Prime Minister Bishop Abel Muzorewa. The results will not be known until next week due to complex security arrangements over the counting of paper ballots. The election follows a bitter campaign. There were more than 800 convictions for fighting among political parties. Two candidates for parliament have been killed, three abducted, and four arrested. And there have been two assassination attempts on Mugabe. Last weekend, 570 British police were flown in to prevent violence at polling stations. Robin Wright, CBS News, Salisbury.
The so-called frontline African states, the principal foreign supporters of Mugabe and Nkomo, have urged those former guerrilla leaders to convert their patriotic front into a political coalition and unite, say the frontliners, to safeguard the victory of the people of Zimbabwe. There was an accident yesterday at a nuclear power plant near Tampa, Florida. Bruce Hall has the latest.
A Nuclear Regulatory Commission official has tentatively placed the blame for yesterday's emergency at the Crystal River Nuclear Facility on the plant's designers, the Babcock and Wilcox Company. The same company designed the plant at Three Mile Island. The NRC said a poor design forced the pressure in the reactor building to drop too quickly after there was an automatic shutdown because of an electrical failure. Florida power officials say the emergency has now ended, but they are faced with the problem of getting rid of approximately 60,000 gallons of radioactive water that spilled onto the floor of the containment building. Apparently, none of the radioactive material escaped from the plant. The three-year-old nuclear facility about 60 miles north of Tampa has been plagued with problems, frequently having to operate at reduced power. Last year, the company sued Babcock and Wilcox, claiming substandard equipment had been installed in the facility. Babcock and Wilcox agreed to a substantial out-of-court settlement, and the plant has continued to have equipment failures. Bruce Hall, CBS News, Tampa.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission in Washington says it's ready to begin lifting its ban on new nuclear power plants. House and Senate conferees have finally approved a compromise version of one of the three major administration energy bills now moving through Congress, the so-called windfall profits tax on extra oil industry revenues flowing from decontrolled oil prices. Nelson Benton has details.
The measure, now subject to final approval in both houses of Congress, would tax the industry some $227 billion over the next decade. Conferees earmarked 60% of the tax for future tax cuts, 25% for energy assistance to the poor, and 15% for energy and transportation development. Conference Chairman Russell Long thinks the compromise will pass both houses easily.
No one will be entirely satisfied with this bill, but the nation will be better off because it will be implementing a program that does mean more production, and it means more conservation, and it means that we'll develop alternative sources of energy.
Final congressional action is expected to send the windfall tax measure to President Carter for signature as early as mid-March. Nelson Benton, CBS News, Washington.
The secretary of Iran's ruling Revolutionary Council indicated today that it may be another 10 weeks before anything is done about release of the American hostages, now in their 116th day of captivity. A Taiwanese airliner with 135 people aboard crash-landed and exploded in flames today at Manila Airport after an engine fell off. The airline says all but three persons are known to have survived, and there's some speculation that those three also survived.
This is The World Tonight. Good evening. I'm Douglas Edwards, CBS News. A leading member of Iran's Revolutionary Council said today that Iran's parliament might not reach a decision on the American hostages until next May. This is day 116 of their captivity, and tonight there seems to be deepening concern in Washington. Marvin Kalb reports.
Secretary Vance tried to maintain a cool, brave front, but after so many weeks and months of frustration, some of it seeped through when he suggested that the Ayatollah Beheshti's bleak forecast may not be accurate. There have been, he said, very difficult and Delphic statements in the past coming out of Tehran that are hard to read and often get retracted. But he insisted that the UN Commission had two jobs, hearing Iran's grievances and arranging the hostages' speedy release. Still, reluctantly, he had to admit that he really had no idea when the hostages would be free.
I cannot tell you when that is going to be. But all of us in the international community will continue to do everything we can to bring that about at the earliest possible date.
Officials have been asked basically one question all day, whether the administration had been had, even worse, snookered by the Iranians. Answer, an embarrassed no comment. It's been acknowledged here, too, that the administration may soon begin losing whatever political benefits it's been deriving from the hostage crisis. The longer it goes on and the more misunderstandings emerge. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
And another embassy came under siege today. This time, the Dominican Republic's embassy in Bogota, Colombia. A band of gunmen shot its way into a diplomatic reception there and took a large number of diplomats hostage, including the American ambassador. President Brezhnev saw his old friend today, the American businessman Armand Hammer, and in the course of their talks in Moscow, he dropped some more hints on a possible settlement in Afghanistan. Gordon Joseloff reports.
According to Hammer, Brezhnev repeated what he had said in a speech last Friday, that a Soviet troop withdrawal would come only after the United States and Afghanistan's neighbors act to guarantee non-interference in Afghanistan's affairs. But this time, he also added the phrase, they must guarantee to use their influence to end such interference. Hammer said Brezhnev told him he understands that the United States and the other nations cannot control all the elements in Afghanistan. But he said one specific guarantee they could make is that weapons shipped to Pakistan are to be used for defense purposes only. Hammer said he believed that if such guarantees are received by Moscow, there would be an immediate troop withdrawal, and U.S. plans to boycott the Moscow Olympics would be reversed. The American businessman said he carried no messages from President Carter and received none for him. Gordon Joseloff, CBS News, Moscow.
More news after this.
Runway clear. Flight 49, you're cleared for landing.
Some people can't afford a sore throat. Doctors recommend chloraseptic lozenges with anesthetic action to deaden pain fast. In a medical study, adults preferring chose chloraseptic 3-1 over the other leading lozenge for quick temporary relief of minor sore throat pain.
Flight 63, do you read me?
Loud and clear.
If you can't afford a sore throat, get chloraseptic lozenges or fast-acting chloraseptic liquid. Use only as directed.
Now True Value Hardware Stores can help give you a brighter outlook when you make home or auto repairs. Hi, Pat Summerall to suggest you get the Carol Cable 3-wire grounded trouble light for just $5.47 to brighten your work area. It has a side outlet for attaching a power tool and a 25-foot cord for extra reach. Or get the snap-in adapter with a 6-foot cord for just $2.47 to turn a 2-wire extension into a handy trouble light. See the wide selection of lighting supplies at participating True Value Hardware Stores and Home Centers.
Ronald Reagan over George Bush by 27 percentage points. Jimmy Carter over Edward Kennedy by 10 percentage points. That's the final word from the New Hampshire primary. Where do we stand now in the 1980 presidential sweepstakes? Bruce Morton reports.
New Hampshire is a state which is fond of surprising political analysts. It would be impolite to suggest its voters lie to the political pollsters, but once again, New Hampshire has startled everybody. Not by what happened, but by the margin with which it happened. Ronald Reagan burying George Bush, burying the entire Republican field by better than a 2-1 margin. Reagan almost won the Republican nomination 4 years ago. He did it then despite losing all these early tests. This time, he's won here in New Hampshire. He seems to have won in the Minnesota caucuses, and we haven't even gotten to his good states yet. Once again, there are no other frontrunners. Everybody else in the Republican field is reduced to playing catch-up. On the Democratic side, this was more bad news for Edward Kennedy. He could come out of Maine saying, we're catching up, closing the gap. This time, the gap is larger again. Kennedy may win next week in Massachusetts, his home state, but almost everybody will say, so what? And his campaign is left with a nagging question. With mounting evidence in the polls that more and more people are voting not for Carter, but against Kennedy, with a string of losses and no victories, how is he going to raise money? Where does he go for cash? Where, for that matter, does he go for hope? Bruce Morton, CBS News, Manchester, New Hampshire.
More news when the World Tonight continues.
I just bought a new Cougar XR7, and I'm proud of it.
If there ever was a car you could be proud of, it's the totally new Cougar XR7. And right now, when you buy an XR7, you get $500 back, direct to you from Lincoln Mercury Division. And you get mileage ratings that are improved for 1980, with 18 EPA estimated MPG, 26 estimated highway. Use the 18 number for comparison. Your actual mileage may differ. Highway in California mileage lower. Get the exciting Cougar XR7, get great mileage ratings, get $500 back. But hurry, offer applies to new cars delivered to you between February 11th and March 22nd, and cars ordered from production by March 1st. Cougar XR7, fuel efficiency, built in America, $500 back.
Now that's something to be proud of.
At the sign of the cat.
We're your Lincoln Mercury dealers, our pride is shining through.
Our changing times. The Supreme Court has watered down that ancient legal rule that husbands and wives may not testify against each other without consent. Fred Graham has a report.
The reason for the 400-year-old rule that a wife could not testify against her husband, and vice versa, was to preserve marital harmony. But in the case before the Supreme Court, a woman had been used by her husband to smuggle heroin, had been caught, and wanted to testify against him to win immunity for herself. The justices reasoned that in this and in many other modern situations, if one spouse wants to testify against the other, then there's no marital harmony left to preserve. So for any husbands and wives who may be nervously eyeing one another as potential witnesses, here's the new Supreme Court rule. In federal court, she can testify against you, whether you like it or not, as to anything she saw you do or that you admitted to her in another's presence. You can still stop her from testifying about anything you told her in the privacy of the marriage. So the moral of all this seems to be that honesty is the best policy, and the wife you save may be your own. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
Wall Street in a moment.
The Bell System brings you Miss Tammy Wynette.
Reach out and touch someone. Reach out, call up and just say hi. Reach out and touch someone. Wherever you never too far, they're waiting to share your day.
I make a special tuck 'em in and tell 'em you love 'em phone call that makes being away from home a lot less lonely. Whoever you're missing, wherever you are, there's nothing like a call for chasing the blues.
People from coast to coast calling up friends to keep 'em close. Families who care so much, keeping in touch.
Your telephone is your heart line. No matter how far away you are from the folks you love, give them a call tonight.
Reach out and touch someone.
Stocks on the downward side. The Dow Jones Industrials closed around 855, down 9.13. Average price per share down 42 cents on the New York Exchange. Volume over 46 million. Average price up 3 cents on the American. Wall Street on this World Tonight.